Hey, good morning, everyone. Dave Weiner here. I just read a post by Paul Krugman in which he quotes, and of course I should have gotten this up on the screen beforehand. He quotes Alan Abramowitz about the candidacy of Donald Trump and the unthinkable idea that Trump actually will be the Republican nominee for president. And that got me thinking. The thing I did not want to think about is that, yeah, I guess that's what polls measure, I guess, is they ask people, if the election were held today, who would you vote for? And Trump has been very consistently in the lead for like quite a few months. So then you have to ask yourself the question, and this is one again that I've been avoiding, and I imagine a number of other people have as well, is why? What is it when somebody answers that question, you know, who would you vote for, and the answer is Trump, what does that mean? You know, because Trump doesn't say anything other than he's a very raw emotional speaker. I mean, he, if you actually like parse the sentences that he says, they aren't even complete sentences. He doesn't say, I'm going to do this. Well, he does say that, but when this part comes up, I mean, a lot of times the sentences aren't grammatical. They don't say something. They don't say, if this happens, I will do this. They're not that. But when they do, this part is extremely vague, openly vague. He says, don't worry. You'll absolutely love it, whatever it is. It's even more vague than, you know, Richard Nixon ran for president in 1968 saying that he had a secret plan to get us out of Vietnam. This was the big issue at the time. It wasn't that we wanted to go to war. It's that we were completely sick of being at war. We didn't understand why we were in that war. What were we trying to do there, and why were so many Americans dying? I mean, that war was, you know, the moment of coming of age of television as a news medium. That's why a war like that could have gone on in the past with the government completely controlling what we know about it, because the communication, we wouldn't have gotten the immediate sort of feeling. They put reporters out with the troops and saw that there was no front line, there was no well-identified enemy, and who were we going to put into power once we won, if we were to win? You know, that didn't look very clear either. And we now know why. It's that the war that we thought we were fighting wasn't the war that the Vietnamese thought they were fighting. Different, completely different wars. We thought we were fighting to prevent Soviet world domination. That this was sort of, that there was this idea of the domino theory, and that if Vietnam fell, then Thailand would fall, then Burma, then India, then, you know, Pakistan, and it could go around the whole world, and all of a sudden the United States would be the only non-communist country on the planet, and, you know, this was what we were very scared of at that point in time. It, you know, it's instrumental to realize that how, like, completely irrational that fear was at the time, probably as irrational as the fear we have today of Islam, which, you know, it's also being promoted heavily, that idea, not one that occurs naturally. The idea that does occur naturally, however, is that there is one identifiable source of all of our misery, and probably that's sort of the cover story, and that what's behind it is our own feeling of inadequacy, and that putting a person like Trump up there on stage gives us a momentary feeling of we're powerful, we're dominant, we're good. The world may not seem very friendly to us, but we're going to make it friendly on our terms. because we're angry, whatever it is we're angry about, everybody's angry. The moment you find out you're going to die when you're a kid, the rest of your life is fucked. You know? I mean, remember when you realized that you would die? You know? How did you come to grips with that? You know? And then is the rest of your life just sort of trying to tamp down that feeling that you deserve to live forever, you know? So you're angry, and a guy gets up on stage and tells you, I've found out the reason why you're so angry, and I found out a way to dissipate that anger, give you a way to release it, and then everything's going to be great. This is what he says. Do I sound like Trump when I'm talking? Everything will be great, don't worry. You're absolutely going to love it. And it's a bedtime story. And he's a good bedtime storyteller. I mean, he builds a reality distortion field that is incredible. It's the biggest. I mean, it doesn't happen to infect me, nor does it probably infect most of the people that are listening to this podcast, because, you know, we self-select. Steve Jobs never did it for me either, and I know a lot of other people are still in sort of like heavily influenced by that reality distortion field. So I think that's what if you want to understand what it is about Trump and why it's happening now, I guess there are enough people that are very angry and feel powerless, and Trump shows them a way to make that work for them. I also think that a lot of it is that if they could bomb New York, they would do that, or bomb California, they would do that. That it isn't really the Muslims that they're angry at, it's the future that they're angry at. The future that is very confusing and seems to leave them behind. Maybe that would be the ultimate solution if we wanted to sort of reunite the United States, is to try to spread around the good fortune that the rest of us have had. Because there has been a lot of good fortune that's not been evenly distributed. That's why ultimately Trump is dangerous, you know, because so far what we've been hearing is the populist message that resonates with Republicans. He's not trying to get the Democratic voters right now. But let's suppose he does get the nomination. Do you think he can't make the same kind of noises that make Democrats feel good? Yes, he can. And you know what? People will forget that they hated him. When he starts making those populist sounds, there will be remarkably cross-platform ideas. The Republican angst isn't really all that far from the Democratic angst right now. It's a feeling of inadequacy and a feeling that we're losing, and that we want to feel good about ourselves, and this is a way to do that. It gives meaning. Another way of saying it is, the overall problem is that very few of us, have any real sense of meaning to our lives. Why do we get up every morning, and why do we do what we do? And does any of it actually mean anything? And I think when we all dig down deep enough, it doesn't even go very deep, whether you live on the East Coast or in the middle of flyover states, or if you're a refugee, or if you're Muslim, or you're Christian, or whatever you are, you don't have to go all that deep to realize that we live very short lives, and we occupy a very small piece of space, and in all likelihood, our lives don't matter at all. And that the only thing that matters right now is what's happening right now, and that what happened in the past isn't real, and what happens in the future isn't real. It's only this instant, and no, it doesn't matter. And so, can you feel happy knowing that it doesn't matter? That's your challenge. I don't have any answers. Some days I feel like I mean something, and other days I feel like I don't. And that's just the way life is. And I can't, nobody can do anything about it. Not Donald Trump, not Paul Krugman, not Marco Rubio or Barack Obama or the Koch brothers or anybody. It's no different for any of them either, by the way. People like to feel that other people have it a lot better than they do. The truth is, nobody has it better or worse. That we're all basically stuck in the same place of lack of any meaning or relevance to our existence. With that note, I will leave you. Have a happy Sunday and talk to you soon. Bye-bye.